It's June 23rd, 2019. You're listening to Fancy Ramen, episode 123. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
This week, we finish the epic conclusion that is Cookie's big-ass deck.
The big deck energy.
We talk some anime with Kakegurui. I can't pronounce this name. Kakegurui, I believe.
I don't think that looks spelled right.
Probably Kakegurui.
Yeah, that sounds right. Better.
I feel like Kakegurui? I got that off of Netflix's website. Neon Genesis Evangelion, Netflix originals like Bonding, I Think You Should Leave, and epic dating sim games that are all about dating girls like Tokyo Chronos.
We get a little bit of co-op action with both me and Scott in the Divinity Original Sin 2. Neil gets to geek out about Suikoden 5 and many other things like Planet Coaster.
And we answer emails, one of which is, I think, 3 or 4 weeks old.
Gosh darn it, Alex, we love you.
And we gave it probably 30 to 40 minutes worth of audio, so... Actually, watching Spyro get completed in Games Done Quick is kind of fascinating because they're going to play the entire game using that, like, headbutt charge.
Yeah.
You mean because it's that much faster?
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching right now, and the just like breakneck speed that they're running through the level is pretty intense.
Well, if you haven't got the memo yet, Summer Games Done Quick is starting as of this recording.
That's right. We are recording here live at Summer Games Done Quick on my internet browser in the comfort of my home.
Are there any games you guys are looking forward to watching?
I like watching Metroid games get played, but I don't know what they're... I need to see what they have going on right now for what games they'll be doing this year.
Yeah, I also need to see what games they're going to be doing, but I'm always excited to see a game that I know I won't play get beat. So, like, the only way I was able to experience the ending of Nier was during Winter Games Done
that was last year. That wasn't the ending, though, was it?
No, they went through A through K. E?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they went past a couple of things. So, yeah. This is the only time I get to actually beat a majority of my video games.
Which is a shame, because according to Famitsu, their public poll, so this is Japanese gamers for the most part, that is either second or third, I don't remember, the second or third best game during the Heisei era. Only being beaten out by Breath of the Wild and Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, Breath of the Wild's a fun one to watch get beat.
Sorry, I went down memory lane thinking about how K was actually my favorite ending in Nier as well.
Isn't that the oil?
It's Curiosity Killed the Cat, where you eat the mackerel.
What's mackerel in Japanese? I bet it starts with a K as well.
That's possible.
Macaroon, who did it?
So it's the first time the three of us have been together in like 3 weeks, I think, since we've all had, aside from Scott, who's the most dedicated to the podcast at this point.
That is right. I do the least work, but I do show up on time. And that's what really matters. It's also how I did so well in college.
Oh, that's right. Your parents paid your way through Cornell, right? So
yeah, we bought my degree as anybody really should. It's what is it? I did have a teacher when I was a kid who said, you know, the goal here is to teach you strategies to get things done smarter, not harder. And so I think buying your way through life is the smartest strategy. I don't see why other people don't do it.
It's not like you're going to take that money with you into the afterlife, so you might as well use it, right?
That's right.
Exactly.
So what have you guys been up to these past couple of weeks?
I finished my deck.
And it looks nice. I will. I can vouch for that.
And it's sturdy. I put fancy cuts on the end. Yep, it's finished. Got lights on it and everything. I don't know what I'm doing with my life anymore now that it's done, though.
Are the lights Christmas tree lights? I don't think I've seen the finished deck.
It's on the gram and Facebook, I think.
Oh, yes. Social media.
Mm-hmm. I'll boost the picture on the Discord and our Skype eventually. But no, they're actually like deck lights. They go on the tops of the posts, and they look fancy.
Are they the orb kind of deck lights?
No, like, they look like, you know, they look like, gosh, I can't think of, what's the best way to describe them? They look like little houses.
Okay. Lantern-ish in appearance?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
And that's been the story of my life. I haven't figured out how I'm going to cope with anything anymore now that it's done.
You just need to find another deteriorating part of your house and replace it.
I also started a new anime. So it's not new, but apparently there's a new season of it out now on Netflix of Kakiguri.
It's the gambling one?
The gambling one.
Kakiguri. Yeah, okay. I watched a bit of it. Highly sexualized gambling.
Yeah. Mm. It hasn't gotten any less sexualized.
It's all strip poker.
One would think, but nah. The first gamble that they had was literally a gamble where they were betting a chip and they put their fingers inside of a finger guillotine machine, mm-hmm. and the guillotine had a bunch of strings hanging off of it, but only one controlled the actual downward lever of the guillotine. So they were getting off on the danger of losing a finger as each one took a turn cutting a string.
Jeez.
Which that feels like it's right out of Kaiji. Which did you watch Kaiji?
I didn't.
Cookie? Mm-mm. Okay. Just out of curiosity. If you had, I was curious of what you felt between the two. I've been pretty vocal about not enjoying Kaiji, and it was mostly due to the way the narrative is told, not so much the actual story. But Kakiguri is actually told pretty well. Highly sexualized, as I noted before, in case that turns anyone off from it. And the cast is all really interesting. I just hope that they spend less time with the male protagonist because he's boring as fuck.
Mm. He's actually getting more interesting now.
Is he?
Because I don't know. Did you finish the first season of Kakiguri?
No, I got like 6 episodes in or 5 episodes in.
So the last episode, you know, the glint in the eye that the main female protagonist gets?
Yes.
The last episode, he got it.
Interesting.
So yeah, they basically, he had a high risk gamble that he was going to be making, and then he ended up, instead of going for the easy option, working his way out. So like the second or third episode in the second season, he's also gambling again and actually like, yeah, this is it.
So does he still have a purpose, or like, aside from being the male viewer's like
embodiment?
Yeah,
of the situation?
That's exactly it. Embodiment. Because like, he at least had the foil sense of being the only reasonable person in the room that thought gambling was kind of stupid before.
Well, he still kind of thinks gambling is stupid, but now he understands that this female that he's enamored with is going to make stupider and stupider decisions. So his main goal of this season is to keep her from dying, basically.
He's got the first aid kit handy when they do the finger gambling. He's just ready to sew a finger on if he absolutely has to.
Pretty much. But yeah, started watching that, and there's a couple of other shows on Netflix that me and Lizzie started watching yesterday. One is called Bonding.
Mm-hmm.
And one is I Think You Should Leave Now. And I will say they are both excellent.
I know Sierra's watched Bonding, or I'm almost certain of it, and I watched maybe the first skit of I Think You Should Leave, where he has the interview and he's trying to go through the door.
Yes, very much so.
And that's,
I will say,
pretty good.
I'll say the reason that both of these are excellent to me is because since they are on Netflix, you know how people say it's good that Netflix knows that, hey, they know exactly how long their episodes should run and they don't need to pad it with anything.
Mm-hmm.
The first episodes of each of these shows are only 17 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Bonding's episode felt much longer. It felt like it was like 30 minutes, and it's like, dude, we've only been sitting here for 15 minutes. How much more can go on?
They just had a very lean script, essentially. They were getting through everything they needed to.
Yeah, and it worked out. There was good pacing. You found out and learned more about each of the characters in like just the right amount of time. And then the episode was over, and it's like, that's a good place to end that.
And these are both Netflix productions, yes. Correct?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
And then with the I Think You Should Leave Now, it's just weird and kind of off-putting.
It's
in
like
its greatness.
Surrealist comedy. Based upon the just like drawing out awkward tension. There, at least that's what I got from it. I haven't watched more than that is it or that isn't it.
Yep, that's okay. Perfect.
That's like what I thought. Gets
there are ones that are get better and there are ones that are even worse, and you're like, why? One of these standout skits was there was a kind of like a reality TV show game show called Baby of the Year. And they were talking about who was going to be the baby of the year. So they would describe one baby and they'd show the baby, and the baby was cute and adorable. And everyone was like, oh, and then they'd describe cheer. A different baby and they'd all cheer. And then they describe the third baby who was the bad boy baby. And it totally pulls a fucking Devolver Digital press conference and cuts to the audience and like, fuck you. Hope you die. Burn in hell. And this is to a 4-month-old baby.
In a leather jacket, though, right? He's a bad boy.
He does have a leather jacket.
Yeah.
So is I Think You Should Leave like a continuous story or narrative, or
no,
is it more
it looks
skit
like
based?
It looks like it's skit comedy.
It is skit comedy, but Scott, the guy in the first one that's struggling to open the door that goes both ways, he comes back in the last skit.
Oh,
as the same character, so it could have a story. I don't know. We only watched one episode because I was in a very ADD mood. So I was like, as soon as Lizzie got home, it was like, hey, she's like, what do you want to do? You want to watch Good Omens? And I was like, yeah, let's do that. So I turned on Bonding and she's like, this is good. Why aren't we watching Good Omens? Because we're watching this. She's like, cool. All right, I'm ready for the next episode. Then I turn on, I Think We Should Leave Now. And she's like, I'm gonna need you to stop. are we gonna continue watching this? I was like, no. She's like, we're going back to Bonding then? No. Where are we going?
Netflix to Good Omens. Loves it though when you do that. You skip around and pick a bunch of different shows because now you're setting roots up to finish the rest of them, potentially.
Exactly. And I think I'm gonna watch a Spike Lee joint next.
Oh, you're getting the latest NBA 2K game?
Oh, I actually did just get the latest NBA 2K game.
I guess technically it was the year before or before that that Spike Lee did his story, the story mode.
It was. Did he do the story mode for the most recent one?
No.
I ended up picking that up. It was like 99 cents on the Switch. So I did end up buying that, weirdly enough. I was like, I'll be fiscally responsible not to get this. But nah, there's a movie called See You Yesterday.
Oh,
or
yeah.
I'll See You Yesterday or I'll See You Tomorrow. No, I'll See You Yesterday. That looks pretty interesting and very black. So I'm going to watch that because I didn't think I was going to be doing anything at work in my like TV watching thing. But now that I know GDC is going on, GDQ is going on, I might change that up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also remade She's Gotta Have It, the first original Spike Lee joint.
Wait, that was his original? I didn't know that. I thought She's Gotta Have It was a new thing from Spike Lee, or at least from last
year. It's a remake.
Okay.
It's a remake of the original She's Gotta Have It, which was the first Spike Lee joint, from what I understand of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my media consumption that's not video game related.
Well, if we're talking shows that we've picked up on Netflix, I did say that I would do my homework and really test the mettle of apparent anime classic Neon Genesis Evangelion. I think that is how you pronounce it. I do not know.
Evangelion?
We can just call it NGE.
Evangelion.
Okay, I got it.
Evangelicals.
Yeah. I am four episodes in, and I mean, I know it's coming from... Neil, do you know exactly when in the 90s this came out?
Early 90s?
Early 90s.
I can do it.
It looks like early
check.
90s. Yeah. It is a... it is pretty good so far. I would say
95.
I really like the character writing that they're doing. I like the plot and the story so far. The world building is cool. Honestly, the only dig is probably that you can tell that it's an anime with animation quality of 30 something years ago. Almost. I guess 27 years ago, if it's early 90s. That's probably the only flaw I can see in it. And that's not that bad of a flaw because it looks good, I think, for that era of animation. It's just, if you were to compare it to the animation of now, that's the one weakness you'd find. But the storytelling and the characters make a lot of sense to me. And it's very interesting. They do have some really good, I think, artistic direction as well. They just have some shots that show that they're very cognizant of kind of every scene they're trying to build. They have they have at least like two or three moments where there's really just like almost no audio. It's just silence, and they're kind of like juxtaposing a scene, and it's really good. Like, I love the artistic direction behind it as well. I'm quite impressed. We are only four episodes in, though, so I won't give really too many more thoughts until I finish it up. But the intro is a bop, so it's worth at least turning on to listen to the intro if you don't like the anime. You'll at least get probably 45 seconds of one of my favorite openers I've heard in a long time.
Just out of curiosity, are you listening to the new... English dub, or is are
oh,
you
no.
doing the
I'd
sub?
I'd never listen to an English dub if a sub is available.
Okay, just curious, because they apparently, when licensing it for Netflix, I don't know if this was actually mm-hmm. intentional or not, but they did not get the rights to the English dub,
so they had to get new English.
Yeah,
dub.
They re-recorded and actually changed a few things with the translation too. My guess is that the sub is probably going to just be a... This isn't necessarily true or normal, but mm-hmm. the experience I've had with video games is usually that the English subtitles reflect the dub directly. I'm curious how you feel about Shinji, because he's definitely a very polarizing protagonist, and he is definitely the butt of several jokes regarding worst anime protagonists ever.
Except he's just he's a normal kid. The problem is like, I think the perspective lens is in almost every other, especially mecha anime we see, the young protagonist is a savant behind the wheel, except I guess there's no wheel, in the cockpit. And he like is able to skirt death and essentially pilot excellently from the very start. He may need to like sort some things out real quick, but normally we go from seeing young protagonists hop into the pilots or into the cockpit to 5 minutes later like kicking some ass, while Evangelion takes a very, very different approach. And actually depicts what it would be like if a young kid who had no idea they'd be piloting a giant mecha would be doing within the first 5 minutes of piloting their mecha. And that is crashing it face first into the ground, because they did not know they'd be piloting one, let alone how to do it once they were in the cockpit. He also, I think, what's the complaint? He's whiny is the complaint. And it's like, if you were being asked to put your life on the line, essentially in an existential battle continuously for 4 episodes straight, as far as I've gotten, you'd probably have a bad mood about it at the very least. I just see him as a very like realistic character and depiction of someone at that age or with those like motivations.
I'd like to point out that I am almost 30 and I complain when I have to mow the lawn.
Yeah, exactly. It's like calling this character whiny and like being very critical about his like lack of motivation to be a pilot or get into the cockpit seems like the people who are levying this complaint aren't really empathizing with what that character would actually be thinking or feeling. Like, I think they've written him as a very realistic and normal character. And I too would be a like crybaby bitch if I were in Shinji's position. So at that age, especially
constantly wondering if your dad actually loves you or if he's just using you as an Evangelion pilot.
Although it seems like he shouldn't have to wonder that. It seems like his dad's trash and he should know that. That's what I'm talking about with like the great scene building, though. They have a scene where his dad is on the elevator and he and his handler, I forget her name, it's Misato or something like that.
The purple-haired woman
who is essentially his handler. Like she Misato. Handles him. Misato. Okay, yeah. She and him are waiting to get on an elevator and the elevator opens up and his dad is on it. And I think he had just finished piloting the Eva, or he was about to pilot the Eva. And the next like perspective lens is from the ground up and you can just see the division between the room and then the elevator shaft and the elevator like space itself, and you can see this barrier between them as the doors open and there's just complete silence. They don't say anything and then the doors close again. And it's just like that's really, really good symbolism, and it's also hilarious because it's both like it's very deep and it can be an incredibly emotional moment. But when you also think about it, they're just like, you know what? Not this one. And everybody, everybody agrees silently. Like, we don't want to ride with Dad.
And so like, imagine obviously from their perspective where it's just like, Shinji's just like, I can't get on this elevator. But yeah. If you're Gendo, his father, and the elevator doors open, and then you see your son and Misato, and then they close.
They're just standing staring
and
at
you. He's got to be thinking to himself, God damn it, what a fucking horrible son I have.
Yeah. I mean, the show is like, it's funny. It's rarely funny, but when it is funny, I enjoy it quite a bit. The other moment that really just kind of sold me on this, and was one of the few times I laughed out loud at the screen, is when one of Shinji's classmates essentially says, like, you need to punch me back, otherwise we won't be able to bury the hatchet. And so Shinji goes to punch him, and the punch is incoming at the guy's face. He's not moving whatsoever, and he's just staring it down, and then inches before it hits his face, he just goes, wait. Oh, yeah. And the punch just stops, like, inches away from his nose. He goes, you need to hit me with full force. But just the fact that he stared down the punch is so good. Like, they've actually got some really great humor, but it's rare, and it's just kind of interlaced at the end of a lot of like otherwise emotional and touching scenes. And so I think this anime has been crafted with a lot of care, and it's pretty evident. And so I'm enjoying it so far. I'm really curious to see when girl in the red mecha suit shows up, because I know that's a thing, but that's all I know. Like, that there is another pilot outside of Shinji, and the other pilot who is currently a mummy for like these first 4 episodes. So
all bandaged up.
Yeah, she's all bandaged up. And it looks like on the brink of death every single time that they bring her into a scene. And I'm just like, this is hard to watch. She looks real messed up.
Now, just imagine if you're Shinji. Okay, you're not going to do it. We'll send her out.
Yeah, and then he feels guilty. Like, they're doing... I think they're doing a very, very good job of building all these characters. And some of them are like, particularly fun just with the weird quirks that they've applied. His handler has an incredibly, like, foul and messy apartment. And her fridge is stocked with, I think, it's snacks and beer. He's just like, what do you eat? And it's like, just snacks and beer, my friend. Just snacks and beer. Evangelion. We'll give it the full fancy ramen score once I get through it. But I'm actually really happy Netflix grabbed it.
I'll have to jump on Netflix and see what they have for endings as well. Like, if they just... the more I thought about it, the more it clicked that if they just have the TV series ending or conclusion, that's probably going to leave a lot of people somewhat annoyed because it... Well, you'll see. Okay. I'm assuming that they might have like a movie or something too in the series, quote unquote, folder.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool. I hope to see whatever is considered the fan favorite or fan canon ending.
I think you need to watch the actual ending first, just so you can put yourself in the same perspective everyone else had. But then you have to remember before you watch, you know, the cinematic movies or whatever, the cinematic endings, that most people had to wait years to get this.
Oh, go ahead, Cookie.
I was going to say they have the actual anime. Then they've got a movie called The End of Evangelion. And then they've got Evangelion Death, in parentheses, true... what's it? Squared.
Hmm.
I don't know.
What was the first movie you said?
No, it was just the show, is what Cookie was saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got the show.
The End of Evangelion.
Then they've got The End of Evangelion, and then Evangelion Death.
The End of Evangelion, I think, is the recap movie that has a little bit of new footage, but is worth skipping. Or I could be wrong. And then Death, but I always heard of it as Death and Rebirth is the actual. So you basically watch TV series, then Death and Rebirth, or just Death, depending on what it's being called on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And then you watch the rebuilds. Three exciting movies that are really, really interesting takes on Evangelion, but only if you're actually like really into the into Ava at that point. By the way, the manga is also, if for anyone that, I guess this is more a message to everyone as opposed to just you, Scott, but for people that are really digging the series but aren't necessarily satisfied by any of the endings for whatever reason, the manga is actually a fantastic alternative as well. It came after the anime in this case. It is not the same director and writer, or it's not related to Hideaki Anno, the director. But I think it's a really faithful retelling of the story. Putting that aside, I'm going to skip my off-topic week and let's talk about video games.
Well, I've got a game to talk to you guys about.
What is it?
I started playing a game called, oh God, I forget what it's called, Tokyo something?
Tokyo Mirage Sessions?
Ooh.
No.
Damn.
Nope, not that one. Oh God, I've already forgot what it's called. It's the
Tokyo Dark.
No, it's the game on the Quest.
It starts with Tokyo though.
Yes.
Oh wait, you're talking about that dating sim, or not dating sim? Sorry, visual novel that you.
I like how all visual novels are actually just dating sims to you now.
Well, I mean, they kind of are. Even Steins Gate, I imagine, has endings specific to waifus, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine. I don't know. I have not picked up that game in months. So, but like, it seems pretty evident to me that there are affection based decisions or choices that you could make that will, you know, make some people like you more and some people like you not so much.
Does the big guy count as a waifu?
Absolutely. Mm. Anyone that says Dono at the end of every name is absolutely a waifu.
Yeah,
just that's a true. Different kind.
But the game is called Tokyo Chronos. And all I can say about it right now is I've played the intro. I've read through the intro. The lazy in me wishes that they had it in English, but unfortunately it's all Japanese and just English subs.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know is now I want to watch all... I pretty much need all anime intro sequences to be redone in VR because the intro to Tokyo Chronos is like the title credit thing that they do is beautiful. Like it starts off as like a normal anime intro, but you're like watching it on a giant screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the main character, i.e. you, like you put your hand against the screen and you push through and it like completely shatters the screen and all of a sudden you're just in the world. And then they do the whole each anime character like flies by each of the main characters fly by. And I was like, yeah, that was awesome.
You sure you're not playing Persona 4?
You know, if they gave me Persona 4 in VR with just like little touches of VR, I'll be fine with that. Mm-hmm. I'd live with that. So I think I will start doing a little bit more reading of Tokyo Chronos. But so far the story is you and your group of friends that you grew up with.
Including eligible single girls, yes?
Very much so.
Okay.
There's the genius girl, the ditzy girl, and the aloof girl.
And the best friend girl? The childhood friend?
They're all childhood friends, actually.
Oh!
Oh, yeah. Well, you just have way more friends than all those other losers.
Exactly. So it's like you and your group of 7 friends who all like grew up together, but I guess slowly separated during middle school and haven't talked all throughout high school. You guys find yourself in the middle of Tokyo proper.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a giant glass dome surrounding Tokyo. It is just you guys. There was a myth about a kid in Russia and a kid and his mother in Russia going missing, and the kid showing up like 60 years later as a 60-year-old and him describing living in his town in Russia, but no one else was there and surrounded in a giant glass dome that they couldn't break through. The mother died, so then the child got out. So they're thinking that there's somewhere to do with that. And then a giant big screen comes on and says, I'm dead. Who killed me? So it looks like it's going to be a whodunit, where there is a character who is inside of this world who is dead, and also one of the characters killed said character.
So you're playing Danganronpa.
Basically.
But it's only one big mystery so far, or?
Just one big mystery so far.
Hmm.
And then it says, I'm dead, who killed me? And then it hits the title intro sequence, and then it gives me a save point, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to go to bed now.
Mm-hmm.
So how do the cutscenes transpire? Like, are you in environments? I was looking at the review you sent me, and a lot of the footage I saw was basically in what looked like Shibuya.
Yes.
And it was just like a very plain open area. Again, it's hard to tell like 3D perspective from a 2D video on YouTube, right? Without like having the headset on. But are most of the cutscenes in very plain open spaces? And how is it actually like looking around and having to read dialogue boxes above characters' heads And like, I mean, do you feel involved in the conversations? Like, give me an idea of how all that feels.
So the, I will say the set pieces are kind of not super sparse, but very plain looking. So like what you see in that 2D video thing that I sent you is very much, very much what I got to see. But you do feel involved in the conversation thanks to the 3D headset. So basically, like, the first area that you're standing in is just this abandoned building, and you're just in some random skyscraper, and you hear a voice coming from behind you, so you literally turn around, and then there's a character there talking to you, and you're like, oh. And as he's moving through the space, they don't do, like, a, hey, I'm animated walking. They do a, here's a picture of me in one frame walking 5 feet to the left. This one picture is going to disappear. A new picture is going to appear 5 feet to the left of me continuing to walk, and my voice is going to travel that distance. There was one spot where your childhood friend, the ditzy girl and with pink hair, like, gives you a hug.
What's so that they kind like, of getting a virtual so hug?
So they switch your perspective, and my first thought was, wow, you're really, really close to me, and I couldn't, like, back up or get her off of me.
Get her off of me!
Wait, you mean you actually couldn't back up, so it's almost like she was attached to your point of view?
Yes. Huh. So they actually do attach the characters to you. This game is not a room scale game. It is a sitting experience, or like a standing experience. So you're not actually meant to walk around at all. I need to turn on the room scale though, and then actually walk around whenever someone's not attached to me to see if I can see like behind the character models.
If you can peek into their clothing, is that what you're insinuating there?
Very much so.
It's always an important test.
Always an important test. There's a scene where a guy literally like grabs you by your collar and like picks you up. So then your perspective is you see his arms like right below your head area, and you can't shake him off, and his arms kind of move with you. So it's like, yes, you are now above him being held up. You don't have any kind of hand gestures that I can make so far. But it's really interesting to be able to like see my hands in the space. It makes me more invested in this visual novel so far because I am more or less experiencing it as the character because everyone's the same height as me or a little bit shorter because I would be looking at them in a 1-to-1 ratio. Whereas if you're looking at a screen, it's very much I'm looking at a screen.
So
I think you had a different question, but yeah. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, right no, that covers it. I guess that's like an interesting approach with tying the character to you if they're going to have direct interactions or quote unquote physical interactions, because otherwise you would absolutely break the game by just getting up and moving over and now she's hugging
nothing.
The air. Yeah. So
basically.
I'm excited to see like a game like this come out because I definitely think even if they're not like masterpieces, we need more of these interesting concepts or games in different genres to exist before we can actually, you know, make further improvements in VR experiences.
Nope, most definitely. And so far, no choices to give just to everyone talking and figuring out what's going on. So
wait, really?
I'll keep you posted. Yep, as of right now, it's quite literally just been story.
Okay. I guess you said you got through like the intro chapter, so maybe there's no branching path yet.
Yeah, but it sounds like this game does have, at least based off that review thing, multiple playthroughs with multiple endings. So we'll see how many playthroughs are slash endings I get. More than likely just one playthrough slash one ending. Lord knows Danganronpa was very short and only played that once.
Very short, yes.
Oh, not Danganronpa. Sorry, Doki Doki Literature Club.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to say...
No, I did play through that twice.
You got the true ending or whatever? The bonus ending?
Yeah. Either way. I'm enjoying it so far. It makes me excited to see what anime becomes in virtual reality, because I will say that's pretty nifty. That's pretty nifty. Besides that, been playing more of Divinity Original Sin 2, and that's just been my life.
Well, Scott, you have a lot to talk about regarding Divinity Original Sin 2, correct?
Yeah, I could talk quite a bit about it. So Cookie's actually been playing Divinity Original Sin 2 with myself and his wife Lizzie, and Sierra should be joining for our next session onward. She just didn't get to enjoy character creation, so she has to take a pre-made character, which in this game I don't think is all that big of a penalty, because the pre-made characters, or what is it? They're called origin characters, have like surprisingly interesting backgrounds and stories. And I think the game recommends that you pick them originally or initially. And I would have to agree to that. They add a lot of flavor and substance to a role-playing game that already has like a lot to explore and enjoy, but they operate pretty effectively as a motivator for continuing on a very particular path forward in the game. Granted, I think I'm still on the tutorial island, which is enormous. Like,
it's huge.
Yeah, it's like the tutorial island. I'm calling it tutorial island because it's sort of where you learn everything about the game mechanics, and you do a variety of different types of like questing and interactions, so you can kind of see the full consequence of what each type of build or gameplay style for your characters result in. But it's less limiting than a lot of other tutorials that kind of put you into a tight area, and then you get one opportunity to see what sneaking does, and one chance to use a ranged weapon. And then it's like, did you like this pre-scripted ranged attack encounter, or did you like this sneaking option, or did you just run through and hit everything in the face? I'm trying to think. Oblivion did this, and I think Skyrim sort of does it too, where it's just like, here's the suggested option. You should try it, seeing as your character doesn't have like really any they haven't been specialized in any way yet, and then see what you like and commit to it forever. Divinity has been pretty cool with the sense that you're playing up to four characters. You can try out a variety of different setups and loadouts, but immediately you can really start kind of tweaking what your characters are and what they can do, but you get multiple opportunities to try a variety of approaches to problem solving. There are a dozen opportunities to use different types of like persuasion, for instance. And there's a perk that lets you talk to animals, and there's probably another like 5 to 6 persuasion interactions with animals, which means if you're following like a sort of speechcraft diplomatic route, there's tons of opportunities. Combat is everywhere, so you can try a variety of that. And most of the combat encounters give an opportunity to either start out immediately in a fight or get all sneaky-beaky-like and initiate fights with backstabs or pre-position your units. So it just gives you like tons of time and opportunity to really work out what you find interesting or what you like to do. But what I really have enjoyed about Divinity outside of it just being a fun single player experience is all of the like innovations that they have for the multiplayer that I haven't necessarily encountered in another game like it, which is the ability to have multiplayer, even multiplayer split screen online, so you can have two people playing on the same console with two controllers, with another like gaming couple online in one session. And unlike almost any other game I've played of this nature, you have absolute freedom on what you're doing. When I was playing with Cookie and Lizzie, I was incredibly surprised at how much of the gameplay after I think we left the tutorial room. Actually, we didn't even need to leave the tutorial room. You're pretty much given free rein on exploring the game space with just other players being nearby or interacting with it simultaneously. You're not bound to any sort of need to group. You're not instantly teleported back to whoever the team leader is. It's like if you wanted to play the game where you start off with your group and then you never see them again and you essentially just split up and go do your own thing, the game provides you the full opportunity and ability to do it. Multiple players, it looks like, can activate the same quest lines too. So if Cookie were to negotiate to like get an item with somebody, that doesn't lock me out of it or put it like exclusively, or it doesn't put it on our party's to-do list in the sense that like if any one of us completes it, the game treats it like whoever then interacts with the quest giver completed it. Instead, I can talk to a guy for a quest, and then someone else in my party can talk to the same guy and he'll offer the same quest. And so either one of us, I think, can cash in on it.
Wait.
Which
so
almost makes it competitive in a sense.
Let me double check here. But let's say we have Duke Roger of Archibald tells Cookie, and well, the two of you separately, that, look, my son was kidnapped and I need you to save him. And mm-hmm. there are a number of ways you can conclude this quest line. You could go and just kill the robber or the kidnappers and bring his son back.
I thought you were going to say the kid.
What's that?
I thought you were going to say the kid, like, oh, I'm sorry, didn't make it, but here's a finger.
Yeah,
Can I get half payment?
Like, I mean, the type of thing I would expect from these types of Western RPGs is that there is probably a route where you could go and kidnap the kid yourself or just murder the kid and then mm-hmm. negotiate an even higher ransom. But you're telling mm-hmm. me that the same quest can be started by the two of you and you can both do separate routes that would then actually result in different endings?
Nope. Because okay, here,
no, there's only one kid.
Yeah, it's the competition element. So this is the really cool thing, and why I think this multiplayer freedom is so interesting or neat, is if Cookie and I, if we both activate that quest at roughly the same time, we're in the area, we talk to the guy, let's say we're supposed to get an item for Duke Archibald instead of his son. It's first come, first serve. If Cookie and I are playing in a way where we want to cooperate, I can share my inventory, we can trade items around and whatnot. But if we're playing in a more competitive or like antagonistic sense, I can essentially race Cookie to get this item, take it, and then cash it in for the quest and keep the rewards for myself.
So is there a way that you can share dialogue? Like if you're both in the same room starting a quest, will you both get the dialogue?
You can listen in on it.
Only if you listen in.
Yeah.
Let's say you're at like the most pivotal moment in the story quest and you get to side with one faction or another and you're in like a meeting room together. And as soon as maybe this type of situation never comes up, but like you're at a table bartering between these two factions or whatever. And as soon as you make the decision to support one side or the other side becomes hostile.
Hostile, yeah.
Like, If you're all in the same room, is it just the person that initiated the conversation is the only one that has control over all of the decisions?
Yes.
Mm. That's kind of a bummer, because at least the first Divinity had a system built in where you could argue within your party.
I think there might be a voting system somewhere in the game. I just haven't had need to find I think I've seen it once, but I haven't had need to learn what it does because I haven't cared enough.
Yeah, I don't know if I've encountered anything yet in the game that has been a like large consequence that would need voting. But I do know that if you listen in, there are some times where as long as all your party members are present, they each get to give their own piece of dialogue.
Okay. And okay, good.
So yeah, you can express
your own opinion.
Yeah, you get to express your opinion not only to your teammates through the dialogue, but you also get to express it to the other characters who are listening.
Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
How much of the game as a whole gets lost by playing it by yourself?
None. I don't think you actually lose anything. I just think the efficiency and sort of the... I think just playing multiplayer, the biggest thing is that you're able to do multiple things at once, and everybody's kind of able to explore the world in a more... I don't know. It seems like it's more realistic in the sense that like your party members aren't permanently tied to you. And the only way to like manage doing multiple things in the single player is to essentially split the party, take control of a character. And then instead of multiple things happening at once in the world, you do each thing sequentially, but you can be in different spaces.
I don't think it'd be fair to say that you don't lose anything by going single player, because I think you're getting more enjoyment out of the game being able to play it with Lizzie, and speaking from Cookie's perspective, and then even more when you're able to enjoy it with other people. I guess what I'm saying is, would you be interested in playing this game if you were not playing it with Cookie and Lizzie, or Cookie with Lizzie and Scott?
I'm actually doing both right now. Yeah.
Okay.
I too am actually doing both right
now. So the single player experience is different than the multiplayer, but I think Cookie can speak more to it since he's done more of it. They're both fun. So,
I will say the thing that you're going to find with the something that you'll see in the multiplayer experience that you don't see in the single player experience is accidental or griefing.
Yeah, that's so true.
Because when you're in combat, their friendly fire is on, as Scott has found out via my wife and her sloppy inputs.
Yeah, Lizzie's already killed me on an occasion or two, which I mean, it does make it funnier and more entertaining, but like those things just don't normally happen that much in single player, because you're like
you're in control.
You're in control. You can only grief yourself and you're normally aware of it. But if you're playing a little if you're playing a little sloppy with your inputs, like you can end up, instead of helping an ally, setting them on fire or something, and then, watching them burn to death. Yeah.
So
then healing an enemy.
So yeah. what is the permadeath situation like? Again, with these Western RPGs, I'm kind of inclined to believe that if a character dies, as opposed to getting into a knocked out or unconscious state, that they're gone for good.
There's resurrection.
There is only death and resurrection scrolls. In one of the games that me and Lizzie were both playing, we were playing it very poorly.
You ran out of resurrection scrolls?
We ran out of resurrection scrolls and money.
Oh.
This was before we knew that we had to poison the undead creatures to heal them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, our last companion was Fane, and he was low on health. So
you healed him to death.
It's like, I mean, I'm pushing the heal button. Why is he dying?
The lore in the game is really good. It's interesting. They have undead characters, and undead essentially operate on like reverse principles of all the other characters. So the undead can go into like toxic and poisonous areas, and they actually heal as opposed to take damage. But that actually makes an enemy cleric even more deadly, because they can heal your undead, which is actually doing damage instead. Like the undead play is really interesting. They also aggro most of the people that they meet, because people don't like living skeletons. But you can also like pick a lock with your bony fingers, which means that you don't have to keep lock picks. You just, you know, like wiggle your finger in the keyhole instead to unlock it.
Yep. And then the way the NPCs interact with you based on your character's race is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like humans tend to not trust pretty much anyone other than other humans.
They definitely don't like lizards. Nobody likes lizards for some reason.
Yeah.
No one likes lizards except for other lizards. Mm-hmm. And even other lizards are very...
they have like a caste system. So you have one lizard that is essentially like... what is it? There's a dialogue option early on where a lizard is essentially like being aggressive with him, and you can bitch slap him and just be like, you can't speak to me this way. And the other lizard backs down. And he's like, you're right. I can't speak to you that way. And I was like, that worked. I thought we were getting into combat.
Yeah. So I will say that this game is very enjoyable, whether or not you're playing it with friends or without friends.
Mm-hmm.
With friends, it gets messy. And it gets enjoyable. You never know what you're actually going to miss. Slash, you can always run it like, so me, Scott, Sierra, and Lizzie all running together. We can all pick up the skill Lone Wolf. And as soon as we get off of the first island and go out into the world as a whole, we can just be four random adventurers doing random fucking shit by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Is there an end game to this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I don't know what it is. My brother's beaten the game. But
it's still a fully crafted story. It just seems like it's huge. So
it is huge.
Yeah.
It is huge.
It's going to take a lot of time and effort to get through.
For the two of you, if either of you have played Dragon Age Origins, would you say this game's like ignoring graphics
better.
And such, better?
I would say better. I, with zero hesitation, enjoy it so much better than Dragon Age Origins.
But the Grey Wardens are a parallel to the Night's Watchmen in Game of Thrones, Scott.
Look, I'm telling you right now, everything that you liked about Dragon Age Origins seems to just be executed to a much better degree in Divinity Original Sin. The only complaint I have about the game is that in order to play it online with Cookie and Lizzie, we're playing PlayStation.
Yeah, what the hell?
And it seems like it's way, way more optimized for PC gaming. But the game's great, so I don't even care the fact that like the controls are kind of clunky, but
kind of
clunky.
Terrible. They're beautiful.
Is it compatible with mouse and keyboard on PlayStation 4?
Probably.
Yeah. Have you tried?
No, I haven't had a reason to try. It's not bad enough.
It's not bad
to where
enough.
It's like, okay, I can't play this. It's like the hot bar at the very bottom is like literally hit triangle to go through the hot bar.
So it's like PlayStation Vita. Darkest Dungeons, bad. But
I don't
bad.
Know. I think it's just a hefty learning curve to get like quick enough at navigating the menus that it feels comfortable. Like now that I have more than a dozen hours in the game, I'm like, okay, I know how to navigate pretty well.
Are you sure this isn't like the same quickly. Stockholm syndrome that you had from EU4?
Maybe.
Like, I'm not saying EU4 is a bad game, but it's like I think
UI
most people forget
unique.
About the issues that EU4 has, Europa Universalis 4, by the way, when you get 50 hours in.
Yeah.
But you've got to get 50 hours into that, and I'll be honest, I couldn't get 3 hours in.
Yeah, some people are masochists.
Yeah, you Dark Souls players.
That's a game that I think requires multiplayer for the casual player to enjoy. Like, you either have to be hardcore and really into that stuff to play it alone, or you have multiplayer shenanigans and the seriousness and the depth of the game is overshadowed.
But like a big problem with doing multiplayer on EU4, this is, I'm just going to say this and we can drop EU4.
Okay.
I have to get it through that, like, you can learn how to play the game really, really well in single player, but as soon as you play on multiplayer, the game is entirely different. You can't factor in lag and other issues like that. Like, when we were playing with Matt, I couldn't micro, like, even towards the end of our sessions. It's like, I got really decent at playing the game on a single player standpoint because you can manipulate and make the AI do stupid shit with your troop movement.
But you absolutely cannot with lag on multiplayer.
Especially when the desync, like the netcode for EU4, is just garbage, because at some points you'll be like, well, I guess I'm moving 2 months behind.
Yeah. And then your army teleports across a region and they've been flanked somehow.
Yeah. Yes, Cookie, it is bad. Anyways, I digress. Divinity Original Sin 2, I think you guys might have sold me on this. I did not enjoy the first one, so...
You have PlayStation Online?
Yeah, I do. But why would I come on PlayStation?
I know. Why don't you actually pick this up and take Sierra's spot?
No, I don't want to... Like, that. It's a bonding moment for you two.
Yeah, it is. Maybe you can take Lizzie's spot, though. Lizzie's been griefing me pretty bad. I may need her to occupy different spots on the map.
Are you actually limited to four players?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah,
we could do a fancy ramen thing every Sunday morning where we stream Divinity Original Sin 2.
I would absolutely do a fancy ramen plays Divinity Original Sin. I could see it being incredibly entertaining too.
I'm potentially down, but there's a couple problems.
Suikoden 5.
Well, yeah. So I'm doing that on Saturdays and Sundays. I was going to note that the problem, well, the first problem is I'm not going to buy it for PlayStation 4.
Oh, no. Well, if it were on sale on Steam, I only paid $25 for the game. This is a game that's so good and I've enjoyed it so much that I would pay twice, which I've only done for a very small number of games in my
Skyrim.
Life.
Skyrim. Oblivion.
I think it's... Oh, gross. Okay. Besides those two, I feel good about my decisions to buy a game twice. Yes,
and
I don't think I'd mind
buying Divinity Original Sin on PC.
I'd have to learn
how to play this game on PC.
And there's a reason for it. Because if we did it on PlayStation 3... Or, excuse me. If we did it on PC, I don't know how the hell I'm jumping all over the place here. enables the streamability, I guess you could say... far more like you can stream it from the computer you're playing it on or do like a combo setup like me. You can actually use your webcam, whereas unless you have a PlayStation, you do have a PlayStation camera unless you gave that away with your PlayStation VR.
I do have a PlayStation camera,
but even then, like, it's a lot harder to incorporate decent microphones. I mean, technically I could just stream on my end, but then that makes my position way different. Like, I can't play the game in certain ways if I'm also trying to involve the two of you.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Wait, in what ways?
Well, like, keeping the camera on what's going on, if he's watching just his screen,
We wouldn't care about doing that. All three of us would be streaming it separately.
Yeah. Which means it would be better to do computer because I don't want to deal with the mess of PlayStation streaming.
Yeah.
Really, it's just Twitch.
Well, no. But the problem is, like, how are you going to incorporate your better microphones into the PlayStation? It means you're going to have to end up getting some sort of...
Oh, we weren't
going to
worry about that. We were just going to use this, PlayStation mic.
That audio quality is hurting, Neil.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine if you wanted to do that, but, like, if you wanted to... push your product that is your stream in any small way, using the headset microphone is like number one on the aside from having good content, I guess number two on the fucking fix this list.
Mm-hmm.
I feel you. How much is it on Steam?
I'm also surprised by the way that it's not crossplay.
I think it's $45 on Steam. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, time to wait for that to drop down to like $10. Summer sales coming.
Yeah, it's an older game, and it's definitely going to be on a discount sometime soon. And that'll give us enough time to actually, I think, sort out all of the details to do it. But this is something that I would absolutely do on the streaming end. This game, I think, is rife for shenanigans and fun play.
If you guys don't care about gray websites, GOG's got it for $15.
Oh, that's not gray. No, what are you talking about? That's perfectly acceptable.
This is totally fine.
We kind of have an email talking about, well, no, I guess it doesn't mention GOG, but it's part
of
the discussion.
We do need to talk emails, though.
Which, I'm sorry, I didn't paste them in yet.
Never mind. That was
the old Divinity.
Nope, it was DLC. Ah, Cast Off. That's gray. That's got it for $15. Is that gray? K-A-S-T-O-F-F?
We'll look into it a little later. Scott, you brought up Suikoden 5. I'm like 9 hours into that game now, which means I'm just barely getting in, like, out of the first introductory chapter. This game's really long. I kind of knew that going into it, but it's like maybe 80 hours or so. And the first 20 hours are essentially just introduction. So it's harder than, or it's longer than Persona 5 and Persona 4. 5, I think, is more significant in its introductory length. But other than that, and actually, it's not a bad thing because the game does a really good job of using that time wisely. I just wanted to kind of note that the one thing I did not really remember Suikoden 5 being good at was its story. It kind of feels like I'm experiencing Game of Thrones light, where there's less rape and there's less murder and less other things like that.
Mm-hmm. More family-friendly statecraft and competition.
Yeah, but there's still like a lot of intrigue and stuff. And as I'm going through it too, I've also had like some of my viewers talk about how like they don't remember the story being this good, or they're enjoying it more this time around. And since at least everyone that's talking knows what happens in the story pretty well, we all kind of like analyze the decisions as they happen, or the twists and turns and the unexpected events as they happen, and kind of look for plot holes, but not so much in like a "we gotta fucking hate this game" way, but more just like a "does this make sense" way. And a lot of times when we think we come across something that doesn't make sense in the narrative, because a lot of these old RPG stories are flawed and full of plot holes, it's surprising because the writing usually has something to back it up and some reason why something else wouldn't work either. That's all I'll say about Suikoden 5 for the time being. I did play Planet Coaster, which is essentially the spiritual successor to the Roller Coaster Tycoon series, quite a bit of that. I don't know if you guys have seen any bit of Planet Coaster gameplay before, but if you're a fan of Roller Coaster Tycoon, you can imagine this essentially being the City Skylines version of Roller Coaster Tycoon, if you will.
Does that mean the good, more complex version?
Yes and no at the same time, I guess. So like Roller Coaster Tycoon was simple enough that basically anyone could start playing it. If you're a fan of simulation games, especially during that like 90s era of PC gaming.
Which was all of us. If you had a computer, I feel like that was, everybody had at least one simulation game, whatever it was.
It's kind of like how Age of Empires 2 is like a universally loved game, even from people that don't like real-time strategies, right?
Except for me, I hate that game.
Really?
Oh my god, that game was so good.
I've gotten wiped before the 15-minute mark on that game every time I've played it.
Because you gotta get good scrub. There we go. Yeah, I have words. Yeah.
Macro is hard, yeah. I feel you. I am not good at Age of Empires 2, but I love playing it on single player. So Roller Coaster Tycoon's that same way. And I think Planet Coaster, much like City Skylines, is maybe not as universally popular as SimCity. It will alienate people that maybe don't want to fully invest and spend the time learning the system. So, for instance, the game's customization options are so ridiculously extensive that if you just wanted to build a burger store, your choices are either A, take the default burger store that can look kind of tacky, or B, put down the brick inner building of the burger store and spend the next 15 minutes putting all of these small pieces together to make it look like an actual store or like storefront. While the generic brick building or the generic tacky Planet Coaster themed burger store might work fine if you're into the game just enough to want to build a cohesive theme to your coaster or your theme park, hence the name theme park, you may be turned off to the idea of spending, you know, 20 minutes building a small one square store when, you know, you also need to build rides that fit the theme, decorations, you have to And we're not even getting into like modifying or manipulating the land itself. And if you guys are anything like me, one of the satisfying components of Roller Coaster Tycoon was going through all of the different maps and meeting those specific goals you had to, you know, you had to reach before you could move on to the next challenges, right? Mm-hmm. This game implements that in the same fashion, but whether it's just the UI or the goals themselves, it doesn't feel as satisfying reaching those milestones or meeting those goals. And I think part of it is that they don't gate progress in necessarily the same way that they did in Roller Coaster Tycoon, or at least nearly as much. And the challenges don't, at least getting up to like the medium difficulty challenges, don't actually feel all that challenging or different from other challenges. It basically feels like if you just run the park normally, you will meet whatever requirements are expected. And I mm-hmm. felt that Roller Coaster Tycoon, and maybe this is just a nature of the way that the two games operate, actually felt unique enough that you had to purposely aim for specific goals in Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe like my biggest criticism of Planet Coaster is that there's not a sandbox mode that still has limitations, at least not right away. So you either have all of these very specific challenge modes, like pre-existing parks that you then have to go in and fix something like in Roller Coaster Tycoon,
right.
Or you have the sandbox mode, which basically gives you a completely blank, plain-ass map. Like,
right.
It'll be set in the mountains, or on an island, or in the desert, or in a jungle or city, but ultimately what that means is that inside of whatever those settings are, there's now just a big, flat, like perfectly flat piece of land, which isn't interesting to build on at all, in my opinion.
No.
And to top it off, you have unlimited money, so there's no actual, and everything is researched beforehand too. So it's like there's no sense of progression. You can just build or do whatever you want.
Yeah, you can't start with your merry-go-round in the desert, which...
Yep.
I mean, you want to be able to tell that story at the end of the day. Like, back when this started, it was nothing but a swing set in the middle of the city.
And that was, like, the rewarding thing about what was it? Like, I think one of the last Roller Coaster Tycoon maps that you can do starts you off in, like, a relatively crappy area with, like, lots of hills and shit that you can't really build on too well without, you know, rescaling or whatever yourself.
Yeah, which it costs money, right, to
yeah.
do every sort of land manipulation in those games.
Which it will in this game, too, as long as you are not in sandbox mode.
Right, but if it's sandbox, you could build a mountain.
Right.
Cost is no object.
And so the alternative or the solution to this is you can make your own scenario, which puts you in the sandbox mode, and then you make whatever altercations... Or alterations, rather, you need.
Yep.
And then you save it as a scenario and you start playing it from there. But that also means going through and unchecking every technological or researched theme / ride attraction and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like you actually have to go through and remove everything that you don't want. And because the sandbox modes all start on essentially like a plain... like even level geographical area, you also have to spend so much time diversifying the land in a way that is unnatural. Like, maybe this is nitpicking, but I just wish they had like a scenario which was, here is a blank piece of real estate with a bunch of shit and trees and stuff that you might have to tear down or sell or whatever, and it's not like perfect for a world, you know, for a theme park, but now you get to go through the process of making it a theme park and starting from the ground up with limited resources and with the need to put money into research and development to get new rides and things like that. All the negatives aside, though, like the game's pretty fun. The amount of flexibility you have with building your coasters and even things like your pathways and setting up decorations and so forth. Like, there are a few weird things, like setting down picnic tables and so forth can kind of be a giant pain in the ass at times. But for the most part, this game is really well done. And like, if you're head deep into that type of theme park or sim genre, it's really rewarding to play.
It sounds interesting, but I don't know if I can ever get back to that kind of gameplay. Now that I know I can't do the like humble beginnings of a lazy river in a volcanic basin.
Right? That's exactly how I feel about it, too. I wish... And that's the problem. There are some scenarios that would feel like some of the scenario challenge maps or whatever that feel like they'd be a good start. But those mm-hmm. maps also limit you from doing certain things like altering the land. So
yeah,
there's issues there on that front, too. I'm not sure how much longer I'll be playing it. Maybe a couple more weeks. And maybe there are scenarios that you can get off of Steam Workshop, because that is...
Oh, yeah. That's
one of the
true.
Cool things.
That's something that, if it were even possible in the Roller Coaster Tycoon age, probably would have like made that game even head and shoulders above
yeah.
its level of enjoyment that, you know, we derived from it at that point in time.
But
with all the custom made maps.
There was like a scare at the start. When I started playing the game, I noticed that there were a lot of attractions and rides that I had to spend real money on to actually get. It's like the DLC store is literally inside of the game, and it was like the biggest turnoff I've had in a video game lately.
So it was asking for microtransactions in order to build a particular type of like space shot?
Yeah, particular rides or attractions or other things, until it occurred to me that there's actually a filter on the left side of all of these menus that if you just uncheck the premium content or add-ons, it will get rid of anything that you have to actually pay for. And then then at that point it suddenly looked less scumbaggy.
Oh yeah. No, that's nice to have that filter, especially if you could lock it for like parental controls.
Oh yeah. I hope
I just imagine. Yeah. I just imagine my hypothetical kid buying every Six Flag ride and looking at my credit card bill later because I couldn't lock away from those DLC payments.
Oh, and again, just to reiterate as a closing note, just because you like Roller Coaster Tycoon does not mean you would enjoy this game. It gets way deeper than you could ever imagine, you know, in the 90s. Definitely take that to heart. Let's say we close this episode with a couple quick emails.
Yeah.
If you too wanted to write into the podcast and get it read out loud, maybe a month after we receive it, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com. This first one comes from Alex. Remember to sign your name or specify what you want to be read as. If you don't, I cannot say anything in case you don't want to have your name read out loud.
Hey, we'll only violate your privacy if you ask us, like, with enthusiasm to do so.
You got to sign the EULA.
Yeah.
And then
the NDA.
Fancy Ramen Cast, or Cookie specifically. I've been shopping around for VR headsets for a while, and Cookie's comments on the Oculus Quest has me surprised. I've heard that the screen door effect on the Quest is worse than even the Go, in parentheses, Rift and Vive 2. But I'm wondering if it may have something to do with the headset's performance with different brightness settings. Have you experimented much with different brightness settings on all of your headsets?
So I can say I experimented a little bit with the brightness setting on the Vive when I had it. And I will say that with the Oculus Quest, there is no way to do a brightness setting unless you sideload some apps. I tried to sideload some free songs and ended up bricking my Quest for about half a second, but I was able to factory reset it. Hey, factory reset available from the phone, not from the actual headset itself. So that really took us there. But so with the Oculus Quest, I didn't know what screen door effect was until I got the Quest. And the only reason I can now like define and like you can give a definition to something, but until you actually like understand it from seeing it and knowing what it is that you're seeing. So I didn't know what it was with the Quest until I got the Quest, because I realized that the picture was actually a lot sharper on the Quest than it was with the Vive or with the PlayStation VR. So now my older brother has a PlayStation VR. So after I got the Quest, I did end up going on his PlayStation VR just to kind of re-experience it. And no, I have not seen any kind of, like, the screen door effect is so not there with the Oculus Quest that it's mind-boggling. And if someone does say that they are seeing a lot of screen door effect with the Quest, I honestly don't know what they're talking about. And they may want to check out a different headset unless they're a person that's going to be like I just hate Oculus, so get a Vive instead. I would say don't get a Vive out of all the headsets.
When you said getting free songs, were you talking about Beat Saber?
Yeah, sorry, on Beat Saber. Yep, so I sideloaded a developer APK of Beat Saber into my Quest, and as soon as I tried to run Beat Saber after sideloading it once, it would just go to a loading screen and then just be completely dark, no sound, no nothing. Couldn't get out of it until I completely shut off the headset, turned it back on, uninstalled, factory reset, tried it again. Same thing, except for the second time I did it, it instead didn't even boot up. So factory reset it again and was like, all right, I guess I'm just going to have to pay for Imagine Dragon songs. I'm fine with this.
I'm kind of surprised that there's not a way to actually implement free songs in, because I imagine that there are a bunch of songs that people want Beat Saber stuff to that aren't necessarily owned by a body that would like care about Beat Saber.
So there's not an official way, seeing that there would be a... I would say there's not an official way, seeing as they're trying to curate everything with the Oculus Quest. Hence why you've got to like sideload the APK in order to get anything.
So can you with other headsets like the Rift and Vive?
Yep. On my Vive, I had a couple of free songs. I ended up taking one of my own personal songs and making it a Beat Saber song.
But it's not... Wait. Are you not doing something that is unscrupulous to get that done? Do you have to bend the rules to do it?
Yes and no.
Dystopian let's pretend we're in like a dystopian society. And sorry, I know this is getting off topic from the email, but yeah. Dystopian society, you can get put to death for any crime whatsoever, including internet crimes in particular. Do you put custom songs into Beat Saber, or are you scared to do so?
I would put my own personal songs into Beat Saber,
but not like your favorite song from the 80s.
Correct. Because at that point, I don't own the rights to that song.
Okay. I understand. So the act of putting material into Beat Saber is actually not... it's not officially supported, I take it.
It's not supported officially, yes.
Okay.
There's a really great community around it, though.
Just like how there's a great community around emulation. And also a great community around illegal drug use. No. I get you. I just wanted to make sure I understood like the state of Beat Saber in that regard.
But yeah, no. Loading extra songs into Beat Saber is really quick and easy, and saw a bunch of videos of people doing it for their Oculus Quests. Just didn't work out for me.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. But when it comes to the screen door effect, can't. Like, the visual of the Quest, the battery doesn't last super long, 2 to 3 hours, but I'm not going to be in VR for that long anyway. I just replaced the batteries and the controllers, but don't notice any screen door effect. Still loving this device. It's not used daily, but at least every other day. Its use is probably going to come up more now that I'm done building the deck.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious in that. I've wanted to get some way to get Beat Saber with for TIFF. And specifically being able to customize your song. But if that's like a prevalent issue, then we'll see. I'll have to look into that.
It's doable. And it doesn't sound hard. I just apparently fucked something up. So, you know. C'est la vie.
Scott, do you want to read this next email?
Sure.
Thanks, Alex. Bye.
Okay, this is a unsigned email that we got that I'm going to pose to the whole podcast. I find there is a level of hypocrisy in general sentiments regarding Epic Store, Microsoft, and the general idea of what is good for the consumer. It's become so popular to bash on Epic, in addition to it also running Fortnite, but really isn't an alternative to Steam healthy for the community, and Steam also has exclusives, so why shouldn't Epic? Neil, I'd love to hear your feedback on this first.
I wish I could find it. I was actually trying to hunt it down while we were discussing some games, but Tim Sweeney, this feels like it references a Tim Sweeney tweet where he talks about Steam having exclusives and how Steam should like get more exclusives. But this is where I know, like, I don't know for sure what Steam has for exclusives, but the ones that Tim Sweeney specifically brought up were all first-party developments, like Dota, Portal, Half-Life, in which case, like, technically you can get Half-Life and Portal, I think, on other game storefronts, or you can get physical copies of it. Those came when there were physical copies of games being released and not just download keys for, you know, whatever storefront you want. But aside from like small indie developers that I believe are more or less choosing to be Steam exclusive on their own with no benefit to themselves, like I don't know if Steam actually has exclusives.
Apparently all the Call of Duty games since World War II.
Really?
Oh, Modern Warfare 2.
I guess.
Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 4.
Fallout 4 is a
wow,
Steam exclusive.
But what else would it be on, though? I guess is the question.
Oh, yeah. No. This is absolutely like, there are people that are upset when a game is not on GOG. That is for sure a contentious subject. I think the only reason we don't hear about it so much now is because they're now complaining about Epic Store.
And I guess I'm not into the computer gaming, so I didn't even know what GOG was until about half a second ago.
Good old gaming. Basically Steam without the launcher and all that nonsense.
Yeah. GOG is great. Yeah, if you want market competition, especially in computer gaming, like GOG is a good example of technically a competitor of Steam's, though Steam is providing additional services to what GOG provides with the I guess game management option of the library and the.
Sorry, I just wanted to note that GOG, if I'm not mistaken, does do a lot of work at making old games work still. So they do put in, like, Steam absolutely has value to the community because not only do they, well, that what is it that people hate on Epic Store for not having, like, Linux support? And Linux is a growing platform, blah, 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 Penguin. But Valve also does a lot of internal R&D, expanding into VR and other things as well. GOG makes an effort to essentially whenever they are releasing new old games, because that is one of their things as well. They do put great effort into making them run on new computers.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they contribute something to like the video game industry, despite just being places to buy video games. I cut you off there.
No, that's okay. I've forgotten that point at this point.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I think we followed the right path of inquiry. And do you think that those characteristics of, say, GOG or Steam are what you would have as criticisms for Epic not providing to the community? Because
yeah, absolutely.
I've never used Epic. I'm not super familiar with it. When it comes to the level of hypocrisy about general sentiments regarding Microsoft, I'll take that. Like, I have played Microsoft consoles with my Xbox 360 days, but outside of that, I really haven't interacted with it much. but I can definitely say that I'll shoulder some of the burden there as being, I don't know, more inclined to look at, say, PlayStation in a beneficial light than Microsoft. But it feels like Microsoft doesn't satisfy my needs as a gamer as much. And that might be why I complained. But when it comes to Epic Store, like, I don't know anything about Epic Games except for the fact that they're behind Fortnite. They have a store in which you can buy games similar to Steam or GOG or other, I guess, like retailers that sell you keys for games. And there was some third person game kind of like League that they had back in the day that I tried out that I can't even remember anymore.
Dawn Gate? No, I think that was
not
EA.
Dawn Gate. No, it was some sort of competitive MOBA. It was a MOBA that I played back in, it was alpha or its beta stages.
And then it got canceled.
Oh, that one, that
you
pretty
know
one,
I'm
right?
About. Yeah, it was really good looking.
Oh God, it was so pretty. Oh, yeah. What was that game called?
It's kind
I
of fun
it.
Too.
It was a third person action one.
Yeah.
Wait.
But anyway, Epic was behind that as well.
It's the one where you play as a bunch of gods, right?
Paragon.
No,
oh,
yep.
Never mind. Not
it
the
is,
one I was
yeah,
thinking
it
of.
Is Paragon. Yeah, I played some Paragon. Like this is as far as my knowledge of Epic goes. So, really, what's the biggest distinction between the Epic Store and Steam or GOG? Is it the fact that they don't actually provide anything else except for an online retailer for games? Because then we can say you can buy keys for computer games off of Amazon store.
I feel as if some of this is probably directed at me.
Yeah, no, that's why I pointed it in your direction first. But I'm not sure I necessarily see. I don't know enough about it to levy the hypocrisy claim just yet.
All right, then I'll make this quick. I'm first going to say that like a lot of times I do act as a contrarian, and it's not so much because I want to believe the other side is correct.
But it's good for the discussion of the podcast.
Yeah, and so like with Microsoft in particular, I know I take on the mentality not so much of what I want as a gamer or like how the product personally appeals or does not appeal to me, but sometimes I take on I put on the hat of if I am a person trying to analyze the video game industry. And I think a lot of the times why I criticize Microsoft is because I don't know what the fuck they're doing half the time. Mm-hmm. I do want to say, because we didn't cover this last week, but the xCloud stuff that they're talking about, which is essentially very similar to the... It's essentially a more feature or a better version, at least as they say, of Sony's Remote Play. I'm a huge fan of that. And I think that is a cool thing as long as it works. If it works, awesome. When I criticize the company, Microsoft or Xbox, a lot of the times it's coming from a place of just like wanting to understand what's going through their mind. And also an idea maybe of, yeah, I want everyone to do better because that's better for the consumer. And when one of your console makers essentially makes their console obsolete for an entire generation, no offense, but Xbox One, like unless you needed to play Halo 5 and Gears 4, I guess, really, and Forza. But like, I think the whole Forza series is, I could be wrong, I'm not like a racing guy. I think that's available on PC now. So the only games that aren't PC for Xbox One are essentially Halo 5, maybe Halo War 2. But
no,
I think
those
that's
are on PC.
But Halo 5 is not on PC. Halo Forge is on PC. And I think Gears 4 is also not on PC, unless either of those two games are planning to come out. Like, they essentially have conceded that this generation is kind of a failure and are now putting like all efforts forward onto Project Scarlet and the services that are coming to Xbox. I don't necessarily see a whole lot of good coming or a whole lot of good that came out of the Xbox One generation, and that's probably where a lot of my criticisms stem from. That's also put out that the accessible controller is also like a gift, like a godsend in my opinion too. And Cookie,
yeah,
no,
I feel like we did give the accessible controller its time and praise.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. I was going to say that the one thing that Xbox did good for me this for the Xbox One generation was the Xbox Game Pass,
which
that I also enjoy. And do we have time for me to get on my soapbox real fast? Okay. I was going to say, well, my soapbox for Xbox and their Game Pass, and the reason that I love it so much, is because of how pissed I am at PlayStation and their PlayStation Now products that they have. Where Xbox, for the Xbox One, they said, hey, we're just going to make everything backward compatible. Don't worry about it. PlayStation did not. So then PlayStation was like, oh, people want this. Let me come out with something that'll kind of make this right for them. And then they give you PlayStation Now. PlayStation Now is cool if you want to play really old games, if you want to play your PlayStation 2, your PlayStation 3 games on your PlayStation 4. It's great for that. $100 a year, and you can play all the old games that you used to own. With Xbox Game Pass, they weren't thinking about the past. They were thinking, hey, let's have someone subscribe to Xbox and be able to play all the new shit. So my thing is, for $100 a year, I would much rather play the game that I'm going to spend $50, $60 on right now rather than the game that I can go to GameStop and spend 25 cents to go grab and $50 on an old console. That is my soapbox for the reason that I enjoy everything they're doing for Xbox, what Xbox is doing with their platform versus what Sony's kind of just been sitting on. I think right now there are like 10 or 11 PlayStation 4 games on PlayStation Now, and the newest one's like a year to 6 months old. Whereas Xbox goes through and they announce things. They're like, this game's coming out today. Also, it's on Game Pass. Enjoy.
Like, I get you. And I would agree with you that Xbox games, Game Pass, excuse me, is the better choice between that and PlayStation Now, right? Like, hands down. You're absolutely right. My stance, though, is that I think both services are fucking travesties, to put it simply. I am so anti-games. All right, when I say games as a service, I don't mean like League of Legends and MMOs and so forth, but I guess I'm so anti...
the Netflix of video games?
Yeah, video game subscription service, because you absolutely eliminate any ownership that the consumer can have. I'm not saying that they are moving in that direction, but like, you can still go and buy the games, right? And Xbox Games with Gold give you ownership of the free games that they give out every month or every 2 week cycle, right?
Technically.
Mm-hmm.
But
you got to think about it. I would say think about it this way, since your argument is it gets rid of that ownership of the game. How many games do you actually own?
A lot of games. Well, mm-hmm. More importantly, so, I own a good amount of games, and I own the games I want to own.
So I would think of it like, so how many of those games do you own that require servers? But so think about it less from a PC perspective, where you can create your own custom server and do all that. How many games do you own that require servers that once those servers shut down, you can no longer play that game, even though you still own the physical disc?
Actually, I think none.
And that's where your issue of, okay, I don't own this game because I'm paying $100 for the subscription service for the full year, but it's like, I get to play all the games.
But that, rather than, I understand what you're saying, but that means that the person that Xbox Game Pass appeals to specifically are those that only play games that require servers. And you note it yourself too, that like, there are solutions to games that have lost their servers. Like, there was Hero Town? Oh, no, that is not the correct name.
City of Heroes.
Yeah, City of Heroes. Or Hero Town, the fan version. City of Heroes is an MMO that went down that apparently for the past however many years has actually had like a secret that got exposed fan server that was going on this whole time. Let's say if suddenly EA loses all of their money and their FPS games just cannot be supported anymore, including like Apex Legends and so forth. Someone is absolutely leaking that server code out so it can continue to be supported.
So, but this is only helpful if you're playing on PC.
Right. No, that's part true, because you can technically play Phantasy Star Online Blue Burst off of your GameCube to fan servers as well, which is a well, I said it, GameCube version. If the demand was absolutely there, it would exist is the ultimate conclusion. But that's only if we continue to get our hands on raw data, because in a world where, and this is branching off into Stadia, which is slightly off topic, but since we're kind of getting there, I just wanted to bring it up. In a world where we're all playing Stadia or whatever, however you pronounce it, we likely never get our hands on the code for Phantasy Star Online Blueburst. And those fan servers, when Sega ultimately decides it's time to shut those down, or when Sega decides to shut down the official servers, the fan servers never come to be because we never had the game code in our hands in some tangible form.
Mm-hmm.
So the likelihood of someone actually getting the server code and game code and being able to distribute that, essentially, people got to really, really love that game so much, as opposed to it essentially being a niche online action RPG title like it was. But my point with like Game Pass is like, yeah, I guess it goes specifically to people that are playing games as a service that are also being sold as products. Like I absolutely think it's bullshit to sell a game like League of Legends or CSGO or Rainbow Six Siege. I don't know if that's actually a free-to-play game or not. I hope it is, because if it's not, it's literally games as a service, and there's no single-player version of Rainbow Six Siege, right?
Mm-hmm. No, they have their scenario modes that you can play individually, and I don't think it is. I think it might have just recently went free-to-play.
Like, within
but that
the
was
last
after
year.
The Yeah, but that was after the game failed and then was brought back from death via the community.
But like a lot of the games that Xbox Game Pass is giving you are like that do require servers for like online play. Mm-mm. Your Modern Warfares, your Battlefields and so forth.
Also your Forzas.
Yeah.
Your just random RPG games as well, so that don't require servers.
Well, but the RPG games, for that matter, if like that falls into if you're playing them single player, that falls into the games that you would potentially want to own if you're really enjoying them. Like if you want to revisit that game, if this service ever is canceled or stops, or if you just don't want to spend the money, you either have to jump back into the service, or you need to go and find a way to purchase that game for whatever platform at that point, which if you had just purchased the game originally, that would be a fee you wouldn't have to incur upon yourself in the future.
Just be a present fee that you have to incur upon yourself for a thing you don't know if you'd like or not.
Well, I mean, they're like, okay.
But that's the same with every video game.
Yeah, that's the same with everything, and that's also the same with the service as well. You could get the service and expect then basically be unsatisfied with everything, in which case you're actually less likely to. I don't know if this is true or not, but I imagine it'd be harder to refund a service as opposed to going back to GameStop and giving back the. All right, I'm sorry, GameStop's not going to exist much longer. Let's be real. No, but like going back to the mom and pop store and getting a refund, or getting your refund on Steam or whatever the service is.
I think it's fairly easy
to get a refund on like Game Pass or PlayStation Now.
So with the PlayStation Now, I did subscribe to a month, and it came with 7 days free, and I had it for like 2 days, and was like, okay, yeah, this is just really old games. And
canceled.
It's cool that I can download all of these, but I'm going to cancel it. They didn't charge me for the month that I was supposed to pay for because I got rid of it in the 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you end up getting something like Game Pass and saying, hey, I do want to commit the year to this, that they would give you the free 7 days for you to actually try it out and see, is this for me? Is this not for me?
Okay, so there's like a free trial period.
Yeah,
I know it's apples and oranges, but if I can play everything on Steam that I could otherwise play on an Xbox, on Steam, you have a window of return now as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, I guess my whole stance is that I'm just, and I don't know if there's any convincing otherwise. I know there are cases where it works better, but I just don't see a video game subscription being something that is valuable to us as a community Like, I don't think it's necessarily good for us. And why I don't feel the same way about Netflix is, honestly, it's way easier to just fucking copy and steal content from Netflix using capture card devices. So if I really felt, which I don't, mind you, but if I really felt that the content I'm getting from Netflix is irreplaceable, I would absolutely archive that footage. Again, I don't. I'm not copying that. I don't even have a login to Netflix on my computer. But I'm just saying that, like, if I absolutely felt the need to preserve the shit I was getting from streaming, like video streaming services, the stuff I was getting from Netflix, Crunchyroll, etc., I would be making hard copies through video capture devices. And to say, for that matter, if I find like an anime series that I'm especially fond of off of Crunchyroll or whatever, I will at some point pick up the DVD. Or DVDs, I guess you could say. I mean, I guess the only evidence I have of that is I have the copy of the 2DVD set of, or Blu-ray set, excuse me, of Nozaki-kun. Good show, by the way.
Shameless plug.
To get back to, yes, I do need to know I am employed by the people that run Nozaki-kun. So no. To get back to the email, regarding Epic Store, I think the biggest reason I'm annoyed by it, aside from the fact that like the storefront's garbage, and I'm like the biggest... Storefronts to me are huge. I hate Windows Store. I hate the Uplay Store, or like the... Launchers are my biggest, the biggest bane of my existence. But the big thing that bugs me about Epic, in addition to those things and having a broken ass storefront, is that their CEO is such a piece of shit. Like, you will look into his Twitter and read something he tweets, and you can find a statement he made a year ago or 2 years ago directly conflicting with that statement. And I understand that people like change their opinions and so forth. At face value, what he does is essentially just within like a week, he'll contradict himself on something. And his line of thinking and logic is something I've just never been able to agree with as long as he's been in a public image with Epic and so forth. It's seen stupid shit like Randy Pitchford showing a freaking memento he got from testing original Fortnite and him saying something like, I remember telling the guys at Epic that they had something special. And then, like, the bullshit radar in my head comes off, and it's like, dude, you weren't testing Fortnite Battle Royale. You were testing Fortnite Survival Mode. Like, what are you talking about, man?
Which I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's, like, a cool concept, and now it's a Battle Royale.
It is a Battle Royale.
I'm sure now. You can still play original base Fortnite in some capacity.
You can't, not unless you get your own private server.
What? You seriously can't? They stopped supporting the original product at which they created?
Yeah. Oh. Because I actually bought Fortnite, the original Fortnite. Mm-hmm. I bought it. Yeah. Yeah, I can't play that mode anymore.
And that like, goes against my whole preservation aspect. Like,
Hey, that was a game I actually bought. See if I had just had a game as a service and fucking Game Pass, I wouldn't have been sad. No Man's Sky would have hurt a little less too, actually. Now that I think about it.
You should try playing that game again, apparently, because...
It's still as boring as ever.
Really?
I go back to it every six months or so just to kind of try. And yeah, it looks pretty and it's a little bit different-ish, but the gameplay loop of it is kind of boring to me.
Do you get bored playing Minecraft?
I don't play Minecraft because it bores me.
Okay.
So yes. Yes, that whole gameplay loop of vague survival, exploration... build stuff doesn't really do it for me. The Long Dark did it for me because was more interesting for me because of the whole, it actually felt like real stakes to everything I did. So this small platform that I'm gonna sprain my ankle off of is gonna kill me. Whereas like other, like the Minecrafts and the other things, it's just like, okay, yeah, cool, I'll build this. Yeah, it's just not my cup of tea.
I get you.
But yeah, so the gameplay loop of No Man's Sky did not do it for me.
Yeah, I mean, at its best, it sounds like it is a, you know, resource survival game. And
it's Subnautica in space.
Yeah, nothing like what I think a lot of people expected that game to be. But I digress. conclusion, if Epic Store maybe had a better launcher and storefront that wasn't that like supported things like chat and friend lists and so forth.
The storefront has booty.
Yeah. Maybe I personally wouldn't criticize it and other people wouldn't criticize it nearly as much. The fact that they also are apparently actively seeking out exclusives for products that have already been promised to other platforms, which is a huge red flag, like whether or not you can blame them for it, like it's ultimately the developer and publisher's wishes. That's still kind of a dirty tactic. And then mix in the fact that Tim Sweeney kind of lies a lot on Twitter, it feels like. And like those things just bug me to a great end. And there's a degree of morality I want to support from you know, the people I buy products from. So that about does it. And I apologize if I do come off as brash towards Xbox, Microsoft, any other developers at some point in time. A lot of the times I do talk, I do try and present things from like different opinion or different viewpoints that may not always be my own personal feelings.
Remember that time that Neil was saying that he fucking hates Microsoft because they broke his computer?
Oh,
not because
that was a different perspective. Actually, he was channeling. Yeah,
that was a very personal. No, yeah. I think a lot of that hate was specifically towards the Windows Store. Right?
Yes,
I installed Halo Forge. I turned on my computer. It ran fine. I installed Halo Forge. I played Halo Forge. I turned off my computer. My computer would never boot back up.
Yep, totally Halo Forge. Not the fact that he was running Frankenstein of a computer, but Halo Forge.
I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, I can't entirely say it was Halo Forge, but it was the first time I had ever used the Windows Store or the Windows Store installer. And as soon as I got done playing Halo Forge, which was fun, by the way, it's a good game.
Is it?
It died.
I'll have to install it and try it.
We're at 2 hours. Holy cow. Podcasts at fancyramen.com if you want to hear us shit all over your opinion.
Yeah, remember that I'm never speaking from a different perspective. I'm just firing from the hip. You catch some hypocrisy, you can call me out on it.
Yeah, do feel free to call us out. Like, I definitely feel it's probably a little unfair for us to always criticize Microsoft.
We're open to criticism. It's a healthy part of growing and shaping an informed opinion.
PlayStation Now is pretty garbage. Like, I will absolutely admit that.
It's the worst. It is the worst.
If you want to sign up for a month and play a bunch of old games, I see the value in it. But at the same time, I think a lot of those games are just available for emulation at this point, which, if you're okay with graphical issues, you know, I don't know. I also don't want to condone like piracy, but it's,
you're also playing really old games, so you're just going to be okay with graphical issues anyway.
Yeah. Tell a friend, leave a review, leave a like or whatever you do on YouTube. Subscribe to our podcast on podcast addicts, places like that. I don't know.
Tell Neil how much that you want him to play Divinity Original Sin with us by subscribing to his Twitch channel, Fancy Ramen TV. Or, you know, watch me whenever I play those one times at Cookie Skimilk, CUKISKMILK. And
if you don't like either of them,
yeah, peek in on Jay Frey all day, just every once in a while.
He platinumed Bloodborne on stream, I think, which was pretty cool.
Oh, respect.
RESPECK. Respect. Yep.
All right. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.